Well, I really love my sat nav, but it doesn't always get me where I want or do what I want it to do. And I've read these horror stories of people who've gone to the wrong places. But around about 10 years ago, there was a big reunion tour, a 70s soul band. I can't think, the Temptations maybe, one of these kind of bands, did a sellout tour of the UK. And they put into their sat nav Chelmsford. They arrived at Chelmsford ready for this sellout gig. And when they got there, they couldn't find the venue. And there was no one around. And they said, you know, we're the Temptations. We're playing in town. Oh dear, excuse me, my thing's just failed me. That's all right. Yes, I said to Hugh, we get dependent on these things, and if they fail, we're in trouble. and they got there, and there was no one around, and they checked the list of where they should be going, and they put the wrong town in. Instead of Chelmsford, they were supposed to be at Cheltenham. And it was too late. Unless they got a jet to get them there, the gig had to be cancelled and everyone had to get their money back just by one wrong setting. But the way that you can't go wrong with your sat nav is to put the home setting in. You know, I always find that the easiest thing. And it's a nice feeling. You put it in and the home setting's there and you know exactly where it's taking you. Now, we're going to meet particularly Peter this evening, and this resurrection account focuses on Peter, and Jesus kind of puts the home setting into his spiritual sat-nav. Now, Peter's an interesting character. I think if Peter would have been around today, he would have been an Essex man, which is where I come from. I kind of was impulsive, he says what he thinks, sometimes puts his foot in his mouth, and certainly he blew it big time. You know, he said he was going to stay loyal to Jesus. Everyone else might depart from Jesus, but he wouldn't. And of course, he failed and he denied Jesus three times. And the wonderful thing in the gospel accounts is the way that when we read about the resurrection, Jesus drew Peter back. And in Mark's gospel, he said, "Tell the disciples and Peter that I'll appear to them in Galilee." And here in this wonderful passage, we see Jesus bring Peter right back into the fold and give him a sense of direction for his ministry. And that's really encouraging. Encouraging for you and me when we feel that we've let the Lord down. I love the setting of this one. You know, other resurrection accounts, you know, are quite exciting. They happen in dramatic ways. Jesus walks into a locked room or Jesus appears in an unexpected way. But it's in a very mundane kind of circumstances here. They've left Jerusalem, they've gone back to the Galilee, and they don't know what to do, so Peter says, well, what do we do normally? Let's go fishing. And they go fishing, and they labour all night, and nothing happens. And then in the morning, there's this distant figure, and no one knows who it is, but there's this sense of authority about this person who speaks to them. And he says, friends, and literally he's saying, guys, hey, Have you caught any fish? And they say, no. And he says, well, okay, but just put your nets over the other side. Now, we don't know why they did as he said. They didn't know it was Jesus at the time, but there must have been something about the way he spoke, that sense of divine authority he had. So they did what he told them to. And of course, they hauled in 153 fish. And then John realized who it was, and he said, it's the Lord. It's Jesus. And Peter, being that archetypal Essex man who just went for it, funny enough, put his clothes on before he jumped in the water, made himself presentable, jumped in the water, went to the shore and met with Jesus. And when they got there, what happened? Jesus had a barbie ready for them. He had breakfast ready for them. And they hauled in that catch, that miraculous catch of 153 fish and set them out there. Amazing. And here is Peter with the other disciples around that barbie. The fish would have been wriggling about in the sun. The ones that would have been cooked would have been smelling gorgeous. And you know what it's like when you've had a hard night and breakfast is ready for you? It's amazing. Even McDonald's can taste good at times like that. The night of frustration was behind them. It was a perfect morning. And it was about to get better for Peter because Jesus was going to bring him right back in and restore him to the place of grace. And I find this so encouraging because there are times when we blow it, when we let the Lord down. You know, often actually in our kind of evangelical circles, we're very good on the concept of grace, but not always on the practice of grace. This brings me back to grace, the favor God gives to us that's not deserved. Jesus welcoming this errant disciple back and giving him another chance, giving him a new ministry. Well, let's take encouragement from that as we put the home settings into our sat nav. Four settings here that help us find our way home. Firstly, love Jesus. It's great that it starts with love. Love. Verse 15, when they finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? Now, do you love me more than what? The other disciples, the fish that were in front of them? Well, there's all sorts of discussions about what Jesus meant, but let me give you my opinion for what it's worth. This is what I really believe he's talking about. Now, this is the setting. You know, it's a beautiful morning. The Lord is risen. He's among them. He's eating with them. They see that he's real. It's physical. And there's this sense of joy among them. Life couldn't get better. I've been doing lots of Oak Hall trips this winter. That's the other thing I do. I seem to spend a lot of time doing Oak Hall trips at the minute, which I really enjoy. And we go out and take groups of people away, and I give some Bible teaching. And I did five skiing trips, which was really hard going. It's hard getting up every day, going up the mountain to ski. It's really hard going. But one day, on the last trip we did, the last day, when you're in Zillertal, if you go to the Zillertal, the last day, we go up to this place on the mountain for breakfast called the Crystal Hut. And you get this amazing breakfast. And it was April. The sun was shining. We were at the top of the mountain. We had this amazing breakfast. And yeah, I just thought, why can't life be like this all the time? You know, why can't, you know, I'd kind of transport Hazel over here and my family over here and we just live on this mountain forever in this kind of perfect surrounding? Life couldn't get better. And that's the kind of setting here. And Jesus comes to Peter and says, do you love me more than all this? Do you love me for me or for what I can do for you? Well, the important point is here that Jesus is restoring Peter, and he starts with love. He doesn't say, Peter, do this, do this, do this, and you'll be back. He challenges Peter and says, do you love me? Let's start at the beginning. Let's develop that relationship. And maybe you've strayed and you're trying to do all sorts of things to get yourself back. You think, well, okay, I'll do double cleaning duty. You know, I'll even clean the toilets. I'll do this, I'll do that. And it's great that you want to serve, but that's not what the Lord requires of you. The Lord requires you to love him. It's all about a relationship. Yes, Lord, Peter said, you know that I love you. And the original language, that's very emphatic. He's saying, look, I know my actions may have told another story, but really, Lord, I honestly love you in every way. It's like if you said to Hugh, do you like Scotland? Joyce, do you like Scotland? They say, well, of course we like Scotland. It's God's own country. Apart from Nicola Sturgeon, it's perfect. You know, Jesus is kind of drawing this out of Peter. He knows Peter does love him, but he's helping him to focus. Because it's so important that everything Peter does from now on is based in that relationship he has with Jesus. And it's a relationship about love, rooted in love. Jesus wants Peter to love him for who he is, not for what he does for him. And the same goes for you and I. I had an uncle, Uncle Cyril, used to come down, Uncle Cyril and Auntie Elsie, they used to come down from Luton every year, which when I was young, and this was like the 1960s, Luton seemed like the other end of the world. They used to come down and we used to have a nice time with them, stay with my grandparents, and there was always this ritual at the end. Uncle Cyril used to give us six old pence, that is, to buy, that's 2.5p in room. We don't even get half pence now, but used to give us 6p to get a Ross's ice cream. Anyone had a Ross's ice cream? Yeah? You can't beat, they used to be, they're not so good now. They got bought out, don't bother now. But they were the best. Never mind your Ben and Jerry's. Ross's ice cream were the bee's knees. And there was this ritual because we'd have to give Uncle Cyril a kiss. And Uncle Cyril always had this kind of midnight shadow on him, but he never had a beard. He was always a kind of prickly. And it was like kissing a hedgehog. I mean, I've never kissed a hedgehog, but it's the nearest I've ever got. And he'd go, you know, show Uncle Cyril you love him. And we'd give him a kiss. And we weren't showing him that we loved him, though. We wanted that money. We wanted our Ross's ice cream. You know, often that's the case with our relationship with Jesus. We want things from him. And Jesus says, before anything else, it's all about love. It's about you and me and an eternal relationship. Begin with that. Begin with love for Jesus. Don't think there's piles of things you've got to do or piles of things you want from Jesus. but just that Jesus is the Son of God who's established a relationship with you because he's died on the cross. There was someone once said, a philosopher once said, you can't command love. Well, this guy didn't know Jesus. You know, when the Bible commands us to love Jesus, it's really basically saying know Jesus, because you cannot but love Jesus when you know him. Because he's the Son of God, he's altogether lovable, lovely, wonderful. Now, the interesting thing about the second one is it takes Peter and us right out of ourselves. Love Jesus, and then secondly, care for his people, care for his family. Feed my lambs, says Jesus. And that's a beautiful expression, because feed speaks of a shepherd tending his sheep. And lamb speaks of the delicacy of people, that they need gentle, tender, careful care. And it's all rooted in the Old Testament. It goes back to Ezekiel 36. Well, Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd, but particularly Ezekiel 36, when God said that he would shepherd his people. He would bind up their wounds. Jesus fulfilled that and said, I am the good shepherd. And now he's saying to Peter, I want you to be an under shepherd. I want you to do this work with me out of this relationship of love. The day of Pentecost isn't far away. Peter's about to become one of the key leaders in the church. And Jesus is preparing him. So what does he do? Now, does he send him on a leadership course? Does he say, oh dear, PFS isn't running at the moment. We better get it running quickly. Let's send you on that. Let's send you to Bible college. Now, all these things are good. But notice what Jesus does. He just says, feed my lambs. Take care of my people. Not set up an organization or establish a network. The kingdom of God isn't about organizations and networks. It's about people. And it's so simple, you know, if we love the Lord, he gives us this love for his people. And when we have a love for his people, you know, our minds are taken out of our own problems. I don't know what kind of work the Lord may be calling you to, but you can't do anything without love. You can't do the sound mixing. You can't do the computer. Don't think you can hide away in a corner and be a techie. I mean, techies are great, by the way. Techies are some of the best people. I know my son's a techie. But you can't hide away in a corner and think, I can do this because there's no people involved. Whatever we're doing, it should be because we love the Lord and we care for his people. Now, I know that Peter had a very different calling to you and I, but in one way or another, we are all called to care for God's family. I love that verse in Galatians 6 verse 2 that says, bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. If you want to be legalistic, here's where you can be legalistic: by caring for one another, by coming alongside people, by bearing their burdens. That's how you get back into God's way. That's how Jesus puts that home setting in you, by giving you a love for his people. We were with some friends in the Peak District, which is near where we live, and it was a typical Derbyshire spring day, you know, wet and misty. And you get a lot of school groups there. It was kind of Whit Week, and there was this school group on some kind of expedition. And they'd obviously been walking all day. It was damp. They were tired. They were from London, so they probably even hadn't seen a cow or anything, or a sheep before. You know, what's that white thing there going bar? You know, and one of them was really struggling. It was so touching, because a friend took the backpack off them and put it on her shoulder and carried on, bore her burdens. I thought that was amazing. I don't know anything about that group, but that image has always stuck with me. And that's what we need to do with one another. That's how we show our love for the Lord, by caring for his people. Now, Jesus asked him again, verse 16, Simon, son of John, do you truly love me? He answered, yes, Lord, you know that I love me. Take care of my sheep, he said. Notice he says sheep here. Now, the reason he does that is just that lambs emphasize their vulnerability, but sheep is actually the picture in the Bible. There's no subtle difference there. There's nothing dramatic about that. But Jesus is just drawing on all the purpose of God, that he's gathering his sheep together. He says it again, verse 17. The third time he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him the third time, do you love me? He said, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. Jesus said, feed my sheep. Now, why does Jesus keep asking him these things. Yeah, you know what it is when someone keeps asking you about something you're going to do again and again and again and again, and you think, surely they know I'm going to do it eventually. Is that why Jesus is doing it? Does he think Peter might forget? Well, no, of course not. He's doing it because he wants to keep reminding Peter why he's going to care for his people, care for his lambs, because of love. It's rooted in his relationship with him. Every ministry, every work for the Lord has got to be rooted in a relationship with Jesus. Now, every so often we get an early morning call and we get my son on the phone and he says, can you do me a favour today? And I've already got the car keys. I know exactly what it is. The car's broken down. Something's gone wrong. He hasn't got his lift for work. Can we do the school run? Now, what do I say? Do I say, oh, no, am I going to take those brats to school again? Well, no, of course I don't. I say, oh, great. You know, I've got more time with my grandchildren because I love them, because they're great. So they take after their grandma. I mean, it's great being a grandparent. I wish I'd have done it first. You know, you can give them back. But you know, I do it not out of a sense of obligation, but out of that sense of love because of the relationship I have. And that's so key. You know, we love the Lord. We love his people. The Holy Spirit's given us gifts so that we can use them to build up his people. Now, many of you may remember dear old Colin Smith, who went to the States. It was a huge loss to all of us, I think, when he went to the States, 1996 to be a pastor. He was a pastor in Enfield. But Colin was a really interesting guy because he had great leadership and organisational gifts, but a real love for people. He never lost that love for people. And when he went to America to a big church in Chicago, he came back and gave a talk at the FIC conference at the pastors section of it, when we had a pastors session. And I was really interested in what he said. He said the thing he'd noticed was that in America, the church was so program-based, program for this and program for that. And he said to his elders, got them together and said, do you know, we've got to turn that around. We've got to be people-based. And he got this program going where the elders would keep visiting people and spend time with people. And so everyone in the church who was in leadership would be in relationship with people. And that's so important. And that takes us out of ourselves. The problem is, you see, we get so bound up in what we're doing in our little world, we forget we're part of something big. And not some big organizational structure, but something organic, relationships with other people. So, we need to love Jesus, care for his family, and then we need to count the cost. Because going on the path Jesus wants us to go is costly. See, that's where Peter went wrong in the first place. When he was challenged, and that lady said, I saw you, you were with Jesus. Well, he feared for his own safety. He was protecting himself. He hadn't counted the cost. Now, this is such an incredible scene. I mean, life couldn't have got better at that moment. I'd love to have, but I can just imagine it. You know, the early morning sun, the smell of the fish, Jesus there among them, the sense of joy, the hard times were all behind them. Oh, the breakfast, the joy of eating with him, and Peter is restored. Wow, amazing. And then Jesus drops a bombshell. Verse 18, I tell you the truth. And when he says that, he's saying, look, this is a really solemn statement. Listen carefully to what I'm saying. When you were younger, you dressed yourself and went where you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go. Do you remember your childhood? I mean, carefree days, you know, remember those happy days when you had strength? I mean, the energy is wasted on children, isn't it? You see them tear about and have all that energy and they're carefree. And I wish I could be like that now. I could go where I wanted to. I wasn't inhibited by aching. I mean, 5 weeks and I had to go skiing. Only I had to go up on the mountains with the groups because it was expected, but it killed me at my age. And I came back. I've been hobbling for the last few weeks. Life was good and carefree. That's what Jesus is getting at here. You remember those days? You were the master of your movements. You could dress yourself and go where you wanted. Well, that's how your life began. But it's going to end very differently. It's a very gentle and actually a very kind of dramatic way of putting it so it sticks in Peter's mind. Someone will stretch you out and lead you where you don't want to go. Now, what does he mean? Is he saying that Peter is going to end up in the Tiberius home for retired fishermen? And when we get older, you know, we wonder what's going to happen. When I did my bachelor's degree in theology, I did a dissertation about the biblical view of aging. And this was before we had laptops. This was like Stone Age, you know, before people had computers, and we had to write it out, but it had to be typed. So we had to give it to a typist, and my typist, bless her, was rubbish, you know, and there were typos all over it. And there was a cluster of biblical verses, and one of them was supposed to be, "Do not cast me off in my old age." But when she typed it up, it read, "Do not cart me off in my old age." But actually, I thought, I was sitting in the library and I suddenly burst into hysterics when I saw it. But she actually had a point, even though she didn't realise, you know, that you can get carted off. Is that what Jesus is talking about here? No, of course not. He's talking about the way that Peter will die. Look at what John adds in verse 19. Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. And remember, glorify God is shorthand in John's gospel for Jesus going to the cross and being raised from the dead. And so Peter's going to follow the same path as Jesus. And guess what? So are we. We're called to go to the path of the cross. The Christian life is great and wonderful and fantastic, but it can be costly. It will be costly. And we've got to be prepared to pay the cost. When I was a boy, my mum asked me to go shopping. We were on holiday in Cornwall, and there was a little shop there. It was right near the tent. It was safe to go. And I went to the shop, and she said, "Go and buy a pint of milk." She gave me the money for a pint of milk. And I remember what Mum used to do when she went shopping. So I got a big trolley out, and I just filled it with things. Oh, she gets cornflakes. I'll have 10 packets of cornflakes. Now, I like the look of that. And the trolley was like piled up high. And I went to the till. She said, "Do you want all these, son?" I said, yes, for Mum. And she, you know, this was again, you know, Stone Age. This was the 1960s. And she put it in that little machine. And it took her ages. And it all came out this stream of paper that was about a forest full of trees. And then I said, a pint of milk, please. And she gave me the pint of milk. And I gave her the money for the pint of milk. And she said, but this is £10, which was like equivalent to about £100 now. And I said, "Oh, I've only got money for a pint of milk." But she said, "But you've got all this shopping." I said, "Yes, but Mum gave me the money for a pint of milk." And I'd got all these things, but I hadn't realised I had to pay for them. And it's so important that we count the cost for the Christian life. It's joyful, but it's costly, but it's worth it. Have you noticed what Jesus says at the end of 19? "Follow me." You know, when you pay the cost, you follow Jesus in the power of his Spirit and radiate his joy, we're effective. But we need to follow him. And I love that. It's so simple. It's so straightforward. I mean, there are so many big books about how to live the Christian life. And I'm not demeaning those in any way. But often we complicate things, and it's just a simple fact of following Jesus, doing what he wants to do. Jesus leads us day by day. Remember, it comes from that relationship with Jesus that we have. We were on holiday in Cornwall last year, and a major road that was going back to Launceston, where we were staying, was closed. And we looked on the map. We couldn't work out how to get back there. And we thought, well, what are we going to do? And someone pulled in. And one of those things, the Lord has his hand on things, and we prayed about it. And just as we finished praying, this car pulled in. And we went to ask this fellow, and he tried to work it out on the map, and he went, "Oh dear, and well, you go this way and that way." He said, "Look, never mind, follow me. I'm going that way. Just follow this car." And we did. We stuck close to him, we followed him, and it would have been really complicated, but it was so simple. Just follow that car. You know, the Christian life is so simple. Follow Jesus. We are the ones who complicate things. So we need to love Jesus, care for his family, count the cost, and then rest in his purpose. One of the problems is we want to do this, we want to do that, and in the end we have to say, "Lord, we need to do what you want me to do. I want to do what you want me to do. I want to rest in your will." Now Peter's been restored. The Lord's done this wonderful work. But, of course, he's still got some rough edges. And suddenly the old Peter comes out. He swings around, he looks at John, and he says, "Lord, what's going to happen to him then?" Look at verse 20. Peter turned, and in the original language, it literally means he spun around. And he said, and saw the disciple whom Jesus loved, who was following them. This was the one who'd leaned back against Jesus at the supper and said, "Lord, who is going to betray you? What's going to happen to him if he's so close to you?" But Jesus firmly puts him in his place. Verse 22, Jesus answered, "If I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you? You must follow me. Lord Peter, I've got a plan for him, and I've got a plan for you. My plan for him is none of your business except you pray for him. You just get on with what I give you to do. And there are times in our lives when we compare ourselves to other people. You know, why are they so much more gifted than me? Why have they got more money than me? Why do they drive a better car than me? Why have they got a bigger church than me? And in the end, Jesus says, well, what's that to you if I've blessed them with that? You follow me and trust the purposes I have of your life. You be content with the role that I give you. I had this kind of real epiphany with this. It just kind of struck me. I was actually, sorry to keep talking about skiing, but I haven't long been back, but I was on the ski lift. Thought I'd go on my own and have a little bit of time to think and pray. And it's great, you know, especially when the lift stops and you've got extra time to pray when someone's fallen off the other end and they stop the lift for a bit. And I was thinking about this passage, and because I'd been looking at something that happened, you know, if someone I knew, you know, he'd planted a church and it was lively and huge. And actually, it's a real challenging situation that the Lord's put me in now. We're in a kind of really quite a pioneering urban church in quite a rough and tumble estate. And it's going to be hard going. I'm going to be really involved and committed in that. But I was thinking, Lord, why can't I be in that situation? In that really thriving situation? Why is it so tough going? And these verses just kind of hit me like that. What is it to you? What is it to you? What I'm doing there, you follow me. You get on with what I've given you to do. That's not for you to decide. It's for me. It's for me to do. Rest in my purposes for you. Let's not compare ourselves to other people or wish we were in their place. Let's just rest in the Lord's purposes. I mean, the great thing is, you know, that when we failed, the Lord is gracious. And maybe here, you know, you've got that sense of failure and you think, you know, what am I going to do? Well, Jesus, like Peter, welcomes you back. But I'd urge you, first of all, start with love. It's about your relationship with Jesus, not about what you should do. And then look outside of yourself. Whatever God calls you to do, it's going to involve his family. It's going to be a corporate work. Care for his family. Count the cost. Maybe that's why you failed in the first place, because you hadn't counted the cost. And like Peter, you said, I'm not going to do that. And then rest in his purpose for you. You know, it's great being having time with Hugh. And I would just close by quoting him, because Hugh has always been, a bit of a grandfather figure. Father figure. over there. But I always love the way he's probably said it to all of you at some point. He's got this lovely saying. He says, let the Lord unfold his will. And you get on with loving him and serving him. And that's what we see here. You know, Peter, just get on with what I give you to do. I'll be with you. And I want to encourage you tonight to do the same thing. And get back to where you were. Get back to that relationship. Care for his family. Count the cost. And just rest in his purpose for you. Amen.